Hey everyone, welcome to the Murder Board Podcast. This is Civil Trials, the discussion show for the Murder Board Podcast. I'm your host, Walter, and tonight I am joined again by Shelton.
Hello.
And Hector.
Hello.
And we are back continuing our cosmic apocalypse with the second movie in the John Carpenter apocalypse trilogy, Prince of Darkness. If you have not seen this movie, this is your spoiler warning. And if you have, I hope you enjoy our show. And I don't know if anyone's even enjoyed this movie besides Shelton.
Oh, fuck.
oh, my God. Okay, look. first impression, and I'm going to go first because I didn't understand shit in this movie. And what I did understand, I have questions about.
Did not do a great job of keeping me enthralled, for sure. I did not like the love side story in this, personally. I don't know why. I wasn't a fan. I thought it was kind of unnecessary. I thought they could use that time to, like, further go into what was actually going on. Rather than this, like, you know, like, this, like, love. You know, like, oh, God, it's necessary. Yeah, whatever. I don't want to hear about that. Anyways, moving on. Other than that, I was generally just confused, I guess, because I'm not too educated, I guess you'd say, in the whole Lovecraft subgenre. But, I mean, it had some strong parts, but it really, like, It didn't get the full house made, you know? Like, it was a weak foundation, and you put up a couple support beams, but you didn't finish the house, you know? That's kind of how it felt to me. It felt like, it was like an hour and 40 minutes, but yeah, it just kind of felt like, it really just felt like 40 minutes worth actual, like, worth watching.
You're much more generous than I would be. Shelton, let's go with you. First impression of The Prince of Darkness.
I do agree that it was very slow at the beginning. Like, the first, say, like, 45 minutes, pretty slow. The love story is weak. I did enjoy it, though. I feel like if they took less time doing it outside of the church area and did it more inside, it would have flowed a lot better, because it felt very detached. But once things start kicking off, it's like, oh, I know what's going on there. That's great.
I'm so glad you understand. Okay, before we even get into the movie, like, this is our continuation of our cosmic horror discussion. So first question goes to you, Shelton, and Hector, you can kind of follow up after him. But this movie was just so weird. I remember me and Shelton were trying to, like, before we watched it, we were looking it up and trying to just, like, figure out what it's about. So, Shelton, my question for you is, what gives this film its Lovecraftian edge? Why do you think this is considered cosmic horror?
I think definitely because it's just the fact that as you're going through the whole thing, it clearly has nothing to do with what we know about religion when it comes to, like, God and the devil and stuff like that. But it takes our understanding of that and finds the parallels between that and a completely different being that does similar things. So it's kind of like, right, so the story of, like, Lucifer and all that, and Jesus Christ and how they interacted with the world and what we know through religion. It took that, and it kind of told us that none of what we've been told is legitimately based on that. It's something completely different, and we use that as a way to understand it. That's what the cosmic horror aspect is.
I was going to follow up on that with just how I did enjoy them tying that subject into the plot, and how at the very beginning of the story they're going into how most I think it was quantum physics and what else was it? Quantum mechanics. They both kind of like break down at the subatomic like level. So that kind of like sets up the mood, I feel like, for the story by that mysterious aspect.
All right, I think you both are on to something. For me, I mean, I understand that it does have that cosmic horror feel. It's definitely out there, but for me, it's just a lot of things, and I think I'm gonna repeat this throughout the entire thing, but the entire show. But like, things I could pick out that I was able to recognize was the whole extraterrestrial deity thing, which is very Lovecraftian. And I wasn't prepared for all the metaphysics. I was not prepared for all that. And also just the talk of tachyon particles. I wrote that down because like it just reminds me of the Flash. And I was like, that's how they decipher his speed and everything in that show back when it was good. So that's all I can pick out from it. So I'm just gonna be like, you know what? That's cool. Second thing here, so we talked about the thing last time, and the thing was very simple. It's very, you know, it's very cosmic horror inspired while also kind of grounding it in a way. This movie takes it in a whole different direction. The main thing I thought was interesting is that here we have a kind of like a two-way battle of this, pretty much the Lovecraftian mythos versus the Christian mythos, specifically in this movie, and how they find a way to kind of combine it. So I wanted to see what are your thoughts on that whole thing there?
I mean, like, if I were to rate it, I would give it like 4 out of 10. It wasn't my favorite combo. To me, this movie felt a little bit too Lovecraftian. Like, they really took that and like they really saw how far they could run with it. To me, they ran with it a little bit too far. I feel like with the thing, they were like really, they captured the essence while keeping it under control. And the Prince of Darkness was just too, I want to say too cheesy with the combination, but I'm not sure. I feel like that's not giving it justice. But yeah.
Yeah, I can see what you're saying, Eric. Yeah, like, you know, last week's movie, The Thing, it's very much so on a more personal, psychological level. You know, it's very human. Again, it's grounded. This one, they said, we're gonna base everything off of these two sides of, you know, legends and just kind of see what happens. Shelton, what was your thoughts on the whole Lovecraft mythos versus the Christian mythos and how they combined it?
I love it because for anybody who says questions religion often can see that and be like, okay, see, so the things that we don't really understand about it are shown through the fact that it's more Lovecraftian. So it's so hard to understand because it's beyond our comprehension. And that really shines when you put it in the lens of the Lovecraftian mythos.
Okay, yeah. So you see the similarities in how they're both very, very ambiguous when you look at it.
Yeah, like, it's the Lovecraftian mythos is so beyond comprehension. Like, in the movie, it says that the priest in the Catholic Church or whatever that founded it thought it was so beyond belief that they had to come up with something more believable to tell people, to keep people from going crazy by the fact that they're not the center of the universe.
And that, for me, hurts a lot. I don't know. It's just, God. It's just, wow. It's a lot.
One thing about the Lovecraftian mythos is that it will not hesitate to tell you that you are an insignificant speck in the grand scheme of things, and I think that that's amazing.
That, to me, okay, seems insulting.
They literally say it earlier on in the movie too.
Yeah, they say
we are insignificant specks in everything, and it doesn't make sense, and I want it to make sense, but it doesn't.
Yeah, they repeat it a lot in many different ways, and I was like, really tugging on my brain there. Last thing before we go to break, and get into the movie and everything. Another theme that I did actually find that was extremely interesting was the whole the thematic argument of amorality versus immorality. And I wanted to get you guys' thoughts on that, but just in case no one knows the definition of either, amorality is an absence or indifference towards or disregard or incapable or the incapability for morality, while immorality is the state or quality of being immoral, aka wickedness. So I guess in a nutshell, amorality is very nonchalant, while immorality is very quote unquote evil. And I feel like that those two kind of clash a lot within this movie through the characters and through the events happening. So what are your thoughts on that whole thing there? What in kind of your understanding of amorality versus immorality?
What?
Like, okay, let's see here if I can simplify it. Basically, we in this movie, there is some kind of statement being said about how, you know, basically a force of nature versus something that is defined as evil. You know, usually we get the whole good versus evil, maybe something in the middle. Here we have something that's like, again, it's kind of mindless in what it does. It's just there versus someone's intent or something's intent.
So this thing is incapable of being immoral, but rather is incapable of having morals, so it would be amoral.
Yeah.
Okay. So, it doesn't really think about the morality of what it does. It simply does what it does.
Yeah, which, you know, is my understanding. Yeah, that's my understanding of all those, you know, Lovecraftian monsters, is that, you know, there are a lot of them are amoral. They just kind of do what they do. And if you die in the process, well, that's it.
I think that also begs the question, you know, like, is the tiger who eats the animal immoral for eating the animal? Why? No, it's just like nature, you know, like in nature, if this fucked up blob or, you know, like liquid is going to cause chaos around it, then, I mean, unless it has that like higher order thinking, then maybe, but yeah, at this point, I don't think it can attain this higher order thinking, so.
See, I thought it did. I thought this thing was completely conscious. Really? From what I saw in the movie, I thought it was completely conscious, which had me thinking, like, so are, you know, can Lovecraftian monsters be, you know, can they go after something with personal intent? Because, again, my understanding was that all of them were just kind of like, you know, oh, this is your universe? Well, I'm hungry, so it's mine now. Like, that's kind of how my understanding of it was. And then, you know, the people who seek it out is kind of just like, my brain.
Kind of like a virus that takes over a planet.
Yeah, but like in this movie, this fucking Nickelodeon slime here seemed like it had a goal.
Dude, it really was like the Nickelodeon slime.
Well, I've got a ton of like
acronyms. Well, yeah, but okay, so like the Nickelodeon slime was in essence the devil, in essence trying to bring back the devil, was it not?
In a way to understand, yes.
Like a workaround.
It's kind of weird because it tries to take so much of what we believe about the devil and then the Antichrist and stuff like that, and package that. So.
Oh, I guess rather than bringing back the devil, it was trying to bring on the Antichrist.
I think it was supposed to be a representation of the Antichrist bringing back the devil.
Okay, so the goop would be the Antichrist, and the thing that was trying to be brought back would be the devil.
Yes.
Okay,
Papa, jump through the mirror, Papa. Jump through the mirror.
Papa John's been eating pizza every day.
But you can think, but if you want to think about it in a more Lovecraftian way and separate it from the belief of Christianity, it's essentially this all-powerful being, one of the old ones, or even Cthulhu, for instance, even though it clearly wasn't Cthulhu, right? That being is in a different dimension. right? It wants to break through to our world. But to do that, it has to go through a process. Therefore, it has a piece of itself or something else and manipulates it to bring it into our world.
So generally, it is evil using the medium of the goop to bring on its own apocalypse.
Basically. But the objective of it isn't to bring the apocalypse.
Bring back, you know, this evil being's form.
Yeah.
Or whatever. Yeah.
The thing about the old ones and things when you go into Lovecraftian mythos, though, is that they don't care about good or evil. They don't have a specific goal to bring like a new world order or destroy the world. That their goal isn't anything like that. Their goals are beyond our comprehension, therefore we don't know them. But whatever their goals are, even if their goal is just simply to exist in our plane, it will destroy us in the process.
And a lot of times that's my bump up against Lovecraft, is that, you know, oh, we don't know what the intents or motivations are. They just are. And I'm like, well, I don't know. I guess I'm just used to Yeah, like that doesn't. My thing is like, in a book, even in a book and in a movie. I mean, in a book you can kind of get away with it because it's a, you know, it's up to interpretation. But in a movie, you have to push the visuals a little more in order for the audience to really interpret in the direction that you want them to go. But you know, in a movie like this, where it shifts different genres, like in the first
really
hour, I'm like, well. Then by the time we get to the end, I'm like, wait, hold on a minute. You mean to tell me, no, not even the end. It's just like the beginning. In the middle, it turns into a freaking, like, you know, they're all talking about God and everything. I'm like, all right, I get this. You know, it's very 70s, very Exorcist. And then out of nowhere, some bitch goes, oh, in the future, people in the 20 whatever 99 in the time travel. And I'm like, hold on, when did we switch genres here? I don't understand. And that's like, I'm gonna get into it, we're all gonna get into it, but right now we're gonna take a break and I'm gonna give you some movie facts that, to be honest, don't help this movie for me, but I hope you guys enjoy these movie facts because I do them every show. All right,
suppose what your faith has said was essentially correct. Suppose there is a universal mind controlling everything, a God willing the behavior of every subatomic particle. Now, every particle has an antiparticle, its mirror image, its negative side. Maybe this universal mind resides in the mirror image, instead of in our universe as we wanted to believe. Maybe he's anti-God, bringing darkness instead of light.
Why weren't we told the truth?
Without the technology to confirm, it would have been another legend. But he was our prisoner, not yours.
We had a responsibility to warn the rest of the world. Only the corrupt are listened to now. They tell us what we want to hear. We believe it to be divine light. Just got colder in here. Suddenly, as if something moved through the room.
All right, so we're back, and here are some movie facts on The Prince of Darkness. It was released October 23rd in 1987, directed by John Carpenter, yet for some reason his name is Martin Quatermass. I don't know if anyone has caught on to that.
It's in the actual movie, when it's showing the beginning credits, it does actually say John Carpenter, so I don't know why it doesn't say it on Where You Found It.
No, when I watched it, it said directed by Martin Quatermass, but like on the poster, it's like it's John Carpenter. He did one of those pseudonym things. I'll explain it later. But okay, so the screenplay is by John Carpenter, music by John Carpenter and Alan Howarth. I hope I said that right. The film stars Donald Pleasence, Lisa Blount, Victor Wong, Jameson Parker, and Susan Blanchard. All right, the plot goes as followed. Poking around in an old church cellar, a priest played by Donald Pleasence finds an otherworldly vial filled with slime. Frightened, he brings this discovery to a circle of top scholars and scientists who eventually learn that the strange liquid is the essence of Satan. The slime then begins to seep out, turning some of the academics into zombified killers. As the possessed battle the survivors, student Kelly, played by Susan Blanchard, is infected by a large quantity of the liquid and becomes Satan personified. The budget for the film was $3 million, and the box office was $14.1
million. Ooh. They made $14 million box office. Okay, it seemed like it had a $3 million budget.
Yep. In the 80s, too. So, you know.
Oof. It was hurting.
No. the producers were right on this one. All right, so just some, like, bonus facts to kind of explain some things. Carpenter became inspired while searching theoretical physics and an atomic theory. He recalled saying, "I thought it would be interesting to create some sort of ultimate evil and combine it with a notion of matter and antimatter." I don't know what that means. And was credited as Martin Quatermass, which, along with the name of the professor's institution, Keele University, the whole thing was an homage to a British film and television writer named Nigel Keneal and his best known character, Bernard Quatermass. The story features, or the stories of the British film and television guy features elements associated with confronting an ancient evil and messages from the future, along with scientific investigation of the paranormal. In an ironic turn, though, Keel was displeased with the homage, fearing that viewers might believe that he has something to do with the film that he didn't like. So it kind of just backfired on him. And last thing, but not least, much like The Thing, most of John Carpenter's films, this movie did fail and was given a new life as it went on to be a quote-unquote cult classic.
Quote-unquote.
Quote unquote. Yeah, so this movie is just kind of like there, I guess.
It really is.
I mean, I've heard of this just because the title. I think the title's good.
Yeah, it's a good title. I mean, you can have a good title, I mean, in a trash story or like trash movie. So at least they made money off of it in the box office.
Yeah. I mean,
was it the best? Hell no. Nah.
Nope.
Definitely not. No, it wasn't the best. I can even say definitely not the best, even though I did enjoy it.
Anyone in close proximity has the same dream.
What is it?
A secret that can no longer be kept. It started a month ago.
What started?
A change in the earth and the sky. His power.
There's a weird locking mechanism. Looks like it can only be opened from the inside.
A life form is growing out of prebiotic fluid. It's not winding down into disorder. It's self-organizing. It's becoming something. What?
All right, let's talk about the Prince of Darkness, Jesus Christ. I guess he's kind of the villain in this movie. All right, I mean, we gave our first impressions. I'm going to just start off. Why the hell are the credits so long in this movie? It's through the entire first act. Like,
I give you Oh, you know what? You are right. Yeah, why were the credits so long?
Like, it just kept blacking out names. And then the plot continues. I'm like, why? Who made this choice?
They should have just did them all, like, when they started doing them instead, but they just kind of kept going.
Yeah, they were, it went through the entire, like, first act. They were just still naming names by the time the title came on. But, like, okay, so this movie begins with a dying old man, Father Carlton, and his tiny box. Shelton, you said you saw this. You ended up feeling you saw this movie before.
Yeah, way back in the day, like when I was a kid. I think my dad was watching it or something. I had no idea what was going on. It was a lot happening. I just remember specific parts, and it seems to be the most crazy parts. So.
Look. Well, hold on. Hector, was this your first time watching this movie?
Yeah, this was my first time watching. It was my second time with the Lovecrafting movie. First time watching this one.
All right, that's nice, because I feel like I've seen this movie before, but I don't know if it's because I was thinking of other movies while watching this one, or if
I reminds me of other movies.
Yeah.
But actually, no, that's cap. No, it doesn't. The shit's weird.
This movie it reminded me of like six other movies while I was watching it. I'm like, so I don't. I had the feeling that I've seen this before, especially in this first hour, but then I was like, actually, I feel like that's a different movie, but I don't know. There were just certain scenes where I was like, did I see this? I don't know. But I'm going to say it. I do like the first hour of this movie where it's just like the priest, it's like he finds the chamber and everything. We don't know what's inside. We don't see it. He's connecting with the professor, this old Asian man who's screaming at his students. I thought that was pretty funny.
I did like that.
I had no idea what the hell he was teaching, but I was like really interested. You know, if you listen to the podcast, I love a good classroom scene. They usually tell you the theme. I tried to catch on to the theme, especially in this movie, but as we will talk about, it kind of just it picks a whole bunch of themes and throws it in there. But yeah, I like the first, you know, getting, I guess they're what, college students or grad students?
Yeah, grad students, because they're both like doctors.
Definitely. I mean, they're studying quantum mechanics and quantum physics, so they're definitely some smart boys and girls.
Yeah, I did like meeting all the main characters and everything. I like this first half. I like, you know, it feels like, you know, oh, we got a thing here. Let me call my old friend who's a professor, and the professor's like, yeah, I know a bunch of people that can help us. And that to me is your movie. Like, that is, you know, you have all these different minds, they're all trying to work together, and maybe throw in, you know, another conflict. This movie throws in like three, and yeah, like Hector said earlier, there's a really weak love story plot line.
It is very weak.
I don't even think it's a love story, it's just a creepy guy. I don't like Brian.
This is valid.
Like, Brian is this, like, tall, skinny white dude with the thickest mustache I've seen in a while in any movie. And he is just constantly watching this girl leave class, standing next to a tree. There's, like, three scenes where he does it. And I'm like, I don't like this dude. He creeps me out.
It is creepy.
Yeah, he's just, I don't know. Everybody in this cast also looks like they're 40. Like, so that's why I was really like, are they supposed to look this old?
Well, they are grad students.
Yeah. I mean, they're like definitely like beginning 30s, I feel like, which is usually like pretty normal for grad students.
I didn't know.
Graduate from undergrad, take some time to work, go back to school.
Anyway, the old man is
tiny box with the key in it.
Yeah, it has a key, and it did he. I didn't understand where he was. Where he died? Was that where the church was, or did he go to this church?
I don't know. It's not very clear where he died.
The church.
He died at the church with the nuns and everything. Is that the
I
same?
Thought he died like close to the. To that the goop, the gabagoo.
I don't know. I thought it was a different place because there's a bunch of nuns everywhere, but
yeah, it is a different place. I'm pretty sure because the church was completely abandoned when the class and everyone gets there.
Okay, well,
so it had to be somewhere different.
Either way, he goes to an older church, and the key opens the door, and we don't really see what's inside for most of this beginning half, but. The priest then writes a letter to his old colleague, which brings together our main characters. It feels like he was just summoning the Science Avengers, though. And because while he was writing, it kept cutting to different students that would be involved. And I was like, okay. And I just got done watching a lot of Avengers movies for preparing for WandaVision. So it's like, it gave off that vibe of like,
oh, dude, I just watched the first episode of WandaVision.
It's so good. We're going to do it.
Yeah, it's really good.
April? I think I have his kid. No, we're doing it in February. We're covering in February. You can join us if you want, Hector.
Oh, I'm so glad we're doing it.
I do want to touch on a genuine fear of mine. A genuine fear of mine is that there's an apocalyptic level of danger somewhere in the world that could be unleashed, and the only people that know about it and that try to stop it are a bunch of old men. That is my fear. Because
because what are they going to do if it requires any sort of physical interaction?
Yes, we're fucked. We're completely, we're all dead. If Satan in a goop form is in a basement somewhere that could easily just crack and get out.
Why didn't they just break open the goop? Oh wait, no, they had a lockup.
It would have infected everyone and caused everything to happen quicker. That's
yeah, you're right.
My thing is why did he have it like covered? The whole entire room is covered in like crosses and candles. I'm like, you know, one wrong move and that place goes down, and we'd all still be like dead because it would just break out. Like,
well, if you remember, because the people who set it up knew what was actually going on. And you remember the chick that ended up becoming pretty much the embodiment of the Antichrist trying to bring Satan back. She had that sigil or rune or whatever on her arm. It was a spell. So I'm guessing that everything hooked up in that room was supposed to be some sort of spell to keep it trapped. But it was just wearing down on its power.
That doesn't make sense given the fact that it's a giant tube of green slime.
It's a giant tomb of something that is a living organism or being controlled by a living organism.
Yeah, but they don't find that out till like a little ways into the movie. Like at some point they're all around a table and the guy's like, this thing can move things with its mind. It's alive. And that's when the girl gets possessed because like it drips down on her throat or something like that.
Oh no, it squirts into her mouth.
Yeah, it squirts into her face.
It's a little bit raunchy, I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, everybody's literally swapping spit in this movie.
Yeah.
It was questionable.
Normally I'd be all for it, but I understood it. Like, okay, first off, did anyone else think that this giant, like, first, I don't know, it's the 80s, but where did they get this giant glass tube to keep the slime in? I didn't understand that. But when they first reveal it, they're like, I was expecting like Power Rangers, like the thing looks like Zardon to me. I was expecting like,
what the fuck?
He's walking this, like, so the priest played by Donald Pleasance is like walking this Asian guy down this long hallway of like candles and crosses. And he's like, and here it is, evil. And I'm like, I'm just waiting for that robot to come out. Ay, 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 ay. And it's like, Rangers. And I was
oh my
like,
God.
Like, honestly, it would have been a better movie this way.
Yes. Like, if this was a Power Rangers movie, I would be all for it. Like, I just couldn't get over the fact that every time they showed throughout the entire movie, every time they showed up, like, I'm just waiting for the face to turn around and it's like Bryan Cranston or that old bald guy from the TV show. Like,
or even like a SpongeBob episode with Mermaid Man and Barnacle Boy. Evil. It would have been a better, way better, like, little snippet.
Speaking of evil, the priest is played by, I forgot his name, but, like, the priest in the movie is played by actor Donald Pleasance. Pretty legendary if you know your horror movies and just, like, other movies. Shelton, we talked about him. He played Loomis in Halloween, the doctor chasing Michael Myers.
That's why he looks so familiar.
Yeah. He's also famous for, I think he played Blofeld in one or two of the James Bond movies back in the 70s. So, you know, he's kind of just known for playing villains. He's known for being the British guy that just kind of like wide eyes and just yells at people like in every movie he's in, except for this one where he's just kind of praying the entire time. And I'm extremely bored by it. I'm waiting for him to lose his shit. Like, you know, in Halloween, he's screaming at kids and yanking them across like houses, waving a gun around. He's gonna kill everybody. And this one, he's kind of like, amen. And I'm like, what? I don't like this guy. What are they doing with this dude?
The acting in the movie was it was okay. It was nothing more. It wasn't like out of the world. It wasn't the worst either.
Yeah, like, I don't, you know, Donald Penn's the only person I know. There's only two people that stood out to me, being the Asian guy, being the two Asian guys, the old man and the guy who was named Walter.
I thought it was really funny the Asian guy wasn't stereotypically smart and they had a white woman explaining shit to him.
Yeah. Yeah. I felt like they were trying to, like, do something there. I thought he was like, I don't know, he does a gay joke later, and I'm like, oh, is he gay? And then he hits on the other Asian girl that's there, and I'm like, oh, so he's not. And I was like, what is with this dude? But he was the only character I latched onto. He was funny.
He's multifaceted, good sir.
He's fluid.
Oh my god.
Get it? Because the whole movie is about fluid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right?
That's funny.
Is it?
I don't know, Shelton. That's why I'm asking. This movie has a lot of motifs in it. And what I mean by that is that it's a lot of things that are shown that, again, make no sense. I guess they're all omens, but, like, we get multiple shots of people looking up at the sun and the moon, and I guess there's, like, an eclipse coming, yet we never see an eclipse. There's also, like, worms on a window at some point, which I thought was weird. And it did.
I also would have liked to see an eclipse happen, but
yeah, like, it would make sense if one happened, but we just never, it just, like, everybody looks up and it's just, there's the moon on top of the sun, but they're never gonna touch, you know. It's just like, you know, there's two dudes in a hot tub, but they're like 6 feet apart because they're not gay, but it's the sun and the moon. I'm just trying to make this movie interesting, because this movie's not that interesting.
I think it's pretty fucking interesting.
All right, you know what? Tell us, what is the most interesting
aspect? I think it could have been more interesting.
Yes.
Well, the thing about the... Well, one thing, right? The whole thing with Christianity when it comes to Satan coming to the Earth is the Earth goes into apocalypse mode. You know, everything gets fucked up with nature and, you know, angels and demons come back and fight and it becomes an inhabitable wasteland, right? It's the same type of thing. It's the same type of thing with the old ones. They are one. How do you understand the motives of a god, in a sense? Just like how we don't understand the motives of God if you believe in God. But with the old ones, it's like their mere existence in the same plane as you could cause dire ramifications, pretty much. And that's what's showing when you see, okay, the sky's really weird. Why does it look like this all the time? The sun and the moon shouldn't be this close to each other. Even if they're not eclipsing, they shouldn't be this close to each other in the middle of the day or the morning. Yeah.
It's kind of like how, I don't know if you guys read comics, but, you know, in the DC comics, whenever, like, something really bad's about to go down, the sky just turns red for some reason. Like, no one can ever explain it, but it just does. So it kind of felt like that to me. But again, it was just weird. It was like, there's no payoff to any of these, like, motifs that happen. Like, there's a bunch of ants everywhere. I didn't understand why. You know, there's a lot of homeless people. Please explain the homeless people.
The homeless people.
The thing about the old ones is that whenever they're around, what they do is they drive people insane because they can't comprehend. The weaker your mental being is, the quicker you go insane, the more likely you are to go insane, even if they're not necessarily around quite yet. So the goop being a representation of the old ones was enough for people with weak minds to be broken. That's why the homeless people were insane. That's why they were already doing its bidding without it even having to manipulate them.
My question is, where did they come from? Because, like, at the beginning of the movie, it's just one lady across the street. And then by the time the entire, like, you know, science team gets there, it's a whole army in one alley just kind of, like, shuffling their way in. And I'm like, what is happening? I mean, I don't know.
Every city has a lot of homeless people, for one. So there you go right there. And two, it kind of shows, like, the omens get more and more, like, the first omen is the sky looking a little weird. The second omen are the insects behaving strangely, because an omen in literally anything somewhat supernatural is animals acting strangely. Insects are very weak-minded and are typically, a lot of them are used for working. Like ants, a lot of the ants are just worker ants, majority of them. Therefore, they simply have one objective, they go and do that objective, and that's it. That's why that one guy, when he got eaten by the beetles, right?
Oh God, I forgot about that. Go continue though.
But it's just it's showing the manipulation of people's mental capacity. And the academics could not be manipulated unless they were directly in contact with it, compared to homeless people or insects, who insects don't really have strong minds at all. They're simply, we have these objectives, we do them. If we die, oh well, we tried to do our objective. Homeless people can have mentals with their issues with their mental health and things of the sort like that. So it makes sense that they'd be the first humans to be affected by it before it even gets strong enough to do anything. And the omens get stronger as the movie goes on because it's slowly escaping its containment.
Which, another question is, so why did it choose now to start, like, escaping? I don't understand how this thing started leaking out of its cage or its container.
It's just like anything else that, like, right?
The vibes were too strong, bruh.
Let's say humans managed to lock Satan into a cage, right?
Yes.
Eventually, whatever they use to lock Satan in the cage is going to weaken or wear off. And Satan is going to be on the inside trying to break out. So eventually, it's going to get weak enough for it to actually escape.
Yeah, that I did think, other than my question there, I did think that was interesting. And mainly because the next Murder Board story, which will be in August, will start off that way, given from where we left off. But, you know, the first, I don't want to give too much away. But basically, if you guys are interested in a little sneak peek of the Murder Board story, it'll start off with a I trapped the devil situation and how I would feel realistically how that would go down. But seeing it in this movie, it just seemed unexplained. It just kind of just started happening. I'm guessing it was the old man who found the goop and trapped it in that basement. Like, that was him. That's why he had that little decorative box and with the key in it. And when he died, I guess sensed it. So when the priest goes down to go find it, it just starts, like, you know, manifesting itself and just started, you know, doing whatever it does. Like, that's what I caught from it.
It's unclear, but I think that the church was abandoned for a reason. Preacher or whatever, him bringing everyone there and trying to reveal it to the world kind of gave the entity in the goop or whatever, it gave it vessels to manipulate. So he kind of doomed people. Like, he almost doomed the entire world by giving it vessels to manipulate. With no one there, it can't really do much because there's nothing to manipulate to help it.
Sort of those things you kind of, you have it and you leave it alone forever.
That's why he had the key on him all the time.
I mean, I would have put it on a keychain, but, you know, a box is fine.
On a keychain, Walter? Oh, let me just carry this around with my fucking car key.
I mean, it would make more sense. It could
doom the whole world, but I'm just going to put it on my keychain.
Yeah, actually, you know what? Now that I think about it.
Fucking A.
But, okay, so this movie has a lot of, like, science in it. I'm not even going to touch on it or question it, but, like, okay, we just spent, like, a lot of time talking about the old ones. Like, Sheldon explained all that. I get it. I understand it. I didn't understand it watching the movie, but I understand it now. But then, so that to me is fine. You can do that. But why did they immediately start adding in all this other, like, science and metaphysical stuff in here? Like, they started losing me. It was like, oh, this thing's alive. It has telekinesis. I'm like, what? It does? Okay. And then at some point, they're talking about mirror images and anti-particles and anti-God. And I'm like, okay, so the slime is anti-God? I thought it was the devil. Is the devil anti-God? I don't understand.
What you have to try and understand is that all of their explanations are them trying to comprehend what it is.
Which
it's feels not necessarily necessary. What it actually is. No, I mean, if you're an academic scientist or someone studying those types of things, and you see something that you don't see is explainable, you use your advanced knowledge to try and make sense of it.
True. Yes.
So that's what they were trying to do throughout the whole thing. But as the viewer, you know that that isn't what is actually happening, and they are just trying to make it make sense in their heads. That's why at the beginning of the movie, they say over and over again, it doesn't make sense. I want it to make sense. I try to put it all in this nice, neat little box from what I know to make it make sense, but it doesn't work and it slips out last second because it doesn't make sense with what you're trying to put in that place.
I mean, that in and of itself is fine. But for me, I'm thinking more on a, you know, logically movie-wise, as a movie-wise. Yeah. As an audience member, you know, I, especially someone like me who knows movies, exposition is usually just explaining things. All right, that's fine. You know, there's entire movies that are just all exposition. But with this movie, you know, they explain it so many times in so many different ways using so many different theories. I feel like it would confuse the audience. And I don't know how you feel, Hector, but like for me, just having one or two explanations and having that be the conflict is completely fine. But here we get like four of them from three different people. We got the preacher and the Asian guy talking. We got the two students talking. And then we got some random worker guys who are talking. And then it's just like things are happening while no one's looking. And that to me is very confusing because I don't know what to follow. And again, it can be ambiguous. It can be Lovecraftian if you want it to. But, you know, if we look back at the thing, again, they kept it grounded. They said, hey, this is our theory on it. We're gonna follow that. It can shapeshift. That's what we know. Here we got a bunch of different things happening, and I don't see how they connect until pretty much a little ways into the movie where people start dying. And even when that happens, it's just random. Like, people are being squirted in the face, and then some of them kill others, and then they squirt other people in the face, and then some guy rams a giant pipe through his throat. How does that make sense?
Well, the pipe thing was more, right, he was just fucking insane. He was driven insane. That's what that was. That showed the mental manipulation. Like, what I don't get is why when the girl kissed him and put the liquid into him, I don't understand why he didn't be like the other ones. But I guess we can assume that. Because with all the other ones, it's a large amount of the liquid. So with what she did, I guess it wasn't a lot of it. So he just got a glimpse of it instead of fully being taken over. So it made him go insane instead of actually completely just taking it. I don't know. I can't explain that. I can try to, but it's that wasn't very clear. But I can see what he tried to do with that, because it's the type of thing where if you even look at the old ones, you will go insane. What you do when you go insane depends on you. So taking that into account, when you see him slit his own throat, you see, okay, he has seen what it is, what it actually is, and knows what it actually is. His mind isn't strong enough to comprehend it, so the solution for him is to die.
Twice, which
it was really weird. Like, I don't know why they brought him back after he killed himself. I think he should have just left him dead. That would have been a great way to show that knowledge of the old ones causes insanity, and sometimes when you're that insane and you know that information, you would rather die than live. That could have been fine, but he came back to life for whatever reason, was still exactly the same level of insane as before. Very weird. Don't know why they did that.
Hector, any thoughts on anything we discussed? See, do you understand anything is what I'm asking. What's your interpretation?
I mean, yeah, I do. And that makes... It really puts the puzzle pieces together of what the hell the movie is. Does that make it a good movie? No. sorry to break it to you. But IMO is still not a great movie. Yeah, I mean, that's my two cents on it.
I mean, yeah, like, for me, this movie is just, like, okay, I understand what you're saying, Shelton. I didn't understand it watching the movie, but you repeating it back and explaining it helps a little bit. But
would you rewatch it?
Hell no. Like, this movie is this movie is overly complicated for no reason. I put in my notes while I was watching this. It's about halfway through the movie. Yeah. Or, you know, towards the end. I'm like, okay, pick a concept and roll with it. But here we have different concepts and different genres going on. I like the first half of this movie because it is more of a, like, sci-fi kind of dramatic mystery thing. You know, why are these people together? I can roll with that. I actually think that's a great concept. I've been trying to come up with something like that for a while now. But then it all of a sudden switches into deep, like, sci-fi stuff. Then we get possession. Then everybody's having the same dream that looks like someone filmed it on, like, a camcorder. I don't know what that's about, but apparently it's people from the future. And then we go back to possession, and we got zombie people. By the way, if you guys didn't know, any music fans out there, I think the head homeless zombie guy was Alice Cooper. So he's in this movie. He didn't do the music, just sad, but he's in the movie. I mean, we got zombies, we got bugs, and, you know, they end up barricading themselves inside the church. Reminded me a lot of the Night of the Living Dead, which is a good movie. But then, you know, again, we got people, we got girls squirting in people's faces like they're the raptors from Jurassic Park. I was completely confused watching this movie. One of them's pregnant because there's a whole gestation thing happening. I just have nothing but questions, and it frustrates me. This movie is frustrating to me.
Yeah, there's a lot of, like,
it was pretty frustrating.
Like, the only reason I can say I like the movie is because all the Lovecraftian elements and the fact that I clearly understand them. But the way they put it all together is not grounded at all and is very strange.
The way they put it together is not for newcomers, that's for sure.
No. What I do think, though, is if you have knowledge of, like, the way Lovecraftian horror works and the old ones and stuff like that, then you can get enjoyment out of seeing, like, those elements in there. But that definitely does not make it a good movie. And even though I enjoyed it, I can stand back and say, man, that fucking sucked, but it was fun.
I guess. I mean, there are certain things that I do like about it. You know, I like the first, like I said, I like the first hour. I like the character of Walter. I think he's funny. I think he's dynamic. You know, he gets locked into a closet for, like, the third half of the movie. Just kind of does nothing but scream through the wall and watch some girl rot her skin off. But, like, I love the line that he gives when he's fighting the girls, though. He's like, normally I love being dominated by women. I laugh so hard at that. He's the only reason I'm entertained at that far into the movie. But I was ready to turn it off. I'm like, give this guy a flamethrower. This movie needs a flamethrower. Like, do something.
Every movie needs a flamethrower, Walter.
Exactly.
It would have been more interesting. Yeah, with the flamethrower.
But, like, I feel like this movie is also paced horribly. Like, again, the beginning for me moved really well, and then it slowed down. And then it started picking up again when the death started happening. Guy gets his neck snapped, and then it slows down again as they explain things. And I'm like, you got to keep the pace here. You know, an hour and 40 minutes should not feel like 2 hours.
It felt like 4 hours, personally.
I mean, like, and that's just kind of like, no, I didn't have to pause it. It was just that slow. But, I mean, all right, Shelton, because you seem to be the only one that really understands this, what was your understanding of the multi-layered ending here? Like, the way this ends is, I feel it's horrible. Like, everybody's kind of separated. The priest is trapped in, like, some, I guess, a closet or something. And he just, you know, the black guy is chasing him. He just kind of he just kind of sits and prays the Negro away. And then that's it. The lady with the skin rotting is, like, reaching through a window that's a portal that's also a pool. And she's grabbing onto some meaty hands, some meaty claws as she's, like, pulling. And she's like, come, daddy. Ooh, hold on. Maybe I should have said
it. Oh, God.
She's just reaching through. And I don't know. It's just like this ending was all over the place.
Okay, so. I get what you mean with all the characters being separated. But I think with how they ended up separated, it didn't feel out of place or wrong. Like, everything's going to shit. Like, all the possessed people just about are there now. And it's like, they're like, oh shit, we need to go this way. The preacher's like, I'm gonna just sneak off this way while
he just kind of disappears, and then he ends up chased by the other dude. I'm like, what the hell is going on here?
I can't even tell for sure if he was even being chased, because what it seems like is that the guy came into the room, and at first he was looking for him, and then he noticed the mirror that would be used as a portal, like, or a connection to the other dimension, and then is fixated on that. I think with knowing Lovecraftian horror and stuff like that, and the insanity, his motives on what he's doing isn't supposed to be very understandable because of the fact that he's so insane. Like, when you're insane, normal people don't understand why you do what you do, for the most part. Mm. When it comes in a scientific way, yes. But when it comes to something supernatural, typically no.
I mean,
the only justification you have is, okay, this being is causing them to be crazy, but I don't know why they're doing what they do.
This entire time you've been saying insane. This movie doesn't seem like people are insane. They seem possessed. Like,
the black guy was insane.
No, he was possessed.
And babbling and like.
I mean, he was insane. That to me didn't seem insanity. That was like he was possessed, but it was just hitting him different. Like, it was just like, I don't know. It was just
who cries like that and babbles when they're possessed. Like, well, okay, so yes, but usually it's like some form of trying to speak, trying to do something, or spasms. He was literally having a mental breakdown the entire time he was on screen, all the time.
Yeah, but he had the goo in him, so I'm assuming he's possessed.
Yeah, I think the crossover between the Christian beliefs and the Lovecraftian old ones elements is definitely... They didn't... Right, so it seems like they're going to jump in with the Christianity and then... It's like, okay, it's not that, it's this. But then it's like, it's this. No, it's that. No, it's this. And that's where it kind of, like, gets weird and confusing for me.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like this ending is confusing because they just they try to pull too many things at once. And yeah. we're gonna end here in just a second here, but like I was just trying to really wrap my head around this ending here. You know, we got the portal, and she's reaching through and she's pulling, I guess, Big Satan. Big Daddy Satan. She's just like, come on in, it's fine out here, and
the water's fine, come on in.
Yeah, and then, you know, she's like telekinetically crushing the priest with a cabinet or something, and then the girl is like, well, I'm a main character, and pushes her through the window, and Brian and his creepy mustache is just like, I'm also a main character, let me have this emotional moment for a poorly written love story. Oh no, she's gone. And then outside, you know, the aliens and stuff are there, and Walter's like, I'm also a main character, let me stare and have no more lines. And then, I don't know, it feels so discombobulated, and I didn't understand what was going on. And then we get this really weird dream ending, or this nightmare ending with Brian, as he's like, you know, we get the reveal that, I don't know, throughout this movie, everybody has these dreams, and it's supposed to be like a premonition of the evil old one being rebirthed and coming back, but it's revealed that it was actually Catherine the entire time, is what I got from it. And I don't know,
honestly. I can't tell you with that one. I can't try to explain that one.
She just walks out the door. She's like, yep, it's me. I was the $1 dreaming about. But then it turns out that it was a dream from Brian. And he's like, well, I had a dream. And then he looks over and we get the whole Nightmare on Elm Street. Oh, the dead thing is in the bed. And then that was it. And I was like, what? This doesn't make sense. And it just ends. The movie just ends with that. Like, he's just like, well, I'm going to touch this mirror. And that's our ending.
I think him touching the mirror made sense. I think her sacrificing herself by going, like, throwing the being that could pull the Satan or whatever into their dimension, you know, pushing both of them back in and sacrificing yourself made a lot of sense, because, like, you know, if anything's coming through a portal and the thing that they need to come through the portal is on the opposite end, push them both in. You it can't would pull work them out if you're in there.
It would work if we cared about this character. You know, a lot of people complain about the latter X-Men movies, especially with Dark Phoenix, in that, you know, Jean Grey, a part of that story, sacrifices herself. Well, it's kind of hard to do that when no one's really connected with the character for more than a movie. And the same thing happens here. I'm like, I don't understand this chick because she's barely in the movie throughout the middle half when all the horror is happening. And all of a sudden she's the hero. And I'm like, no, I mean, it would hit harder. It would make more sense if Walter went in, or even the priest or Brian, like we spent more time. No, this chick's just like, well, that's what I was born to do. It just jumps on in. I'm like, this doesn't, I don't understand. And now that I do understand, I don't like it.
Yeah, it's definitely weird. I think they should have focused less on giving a ton of personality to more of the side characters if they were going to try and do this big emotional ending with Brian and the, forget her name, the lady who sacrificed herself.
Catherine. But I think it's Catherine.
Yeah, Catherine. We'll just say Catherine if we're wrong, or well. but they should have focused more on Catherine and Brian if they were going to make them the main characters, because it's not very grounded on who the main characters are throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, it's just adding characters that die. And I think, you know, I think this movie would have benefited a lot from a lot more drama, just because all this other jargon in here is just very, it's very just bendable. It's very flexible. Again, it's more or less quote unquote open up for interpretation, but I think as an audience member, we need something to grab onto that's a constant, and this movie feels like it has no constants of anything.
It has none.
it's like what Hector said, this movie took the whole Lovecraft thing and said, yeah, we're gonna run with it like a kite in a field and just let go of the kite.
Let me be honest, I don't really like this movie. I just love the theme.
Which I can understand.
The fact that I can see the theme represented in such a blatant way. But it's like, I like, and we've been going through it the whole time and be like, yep, you're right. It's a fucking mess. It's a mess.
Yeah, this will be like, I mean, you know, I've discussed how John Carpenter's directing in The Thing. I thought that was, I concluded that's probably his best direct one, although it's not my favorite. This is the worst I've ever seen John Carpenter do in any of his movies. Again, this is my first time watching this movie, and I'm now scared for the next movie, and that movie came out in the 90s. Y'all know I don't really like 90s movies, so I hope it doesn't get worse, but man, like, you know, there's the camera's just kind of stationary. There's nothing really happening. He does his own music for all his movies, which is just synth, and he overpowers it here. It's just very distracting. And I don't know if this movie feels like it's nothing special. Like, I can think of so many other movies that are much better. Like, if you want, I mean, I'm gonna get into it, but like, if you want a movie where it's a bunch of people locked in a space and they're debating on what to do and how to survive that, I mean, Assault on Precinct 13 is one of his best movies that I've ever seen, and it's that exact premise where it's a bunch of people, you know, in that movie it's a gang. Here we have zombified homeless people. You know, that in of itself is a movie. Or, you know, the big sludge downstairs that's infected people. The Thing, this movie feels like an amalgamation of all of his movies put into one movie, and it, you know, it sprinkled a little bit of Lovecraft and Christianity on there, and it's an upside down souffle of bullshit.
Yeah. I definitely wish that they would have, if they would have done it more grounded and kind of focused more on trying to make the Lovecraftian elements more understandable to the audience while portraying the fact that it's like, you know, they're trying to understand it through this way, but it clearly isn't that, and keep it that way, that I think it could have came out as a lot more grounded. I think the love story, the characters, how they were written, I feel like they had chemistry when they were actually interacting with each other. But if we could have gotten more than the just, I love you, but I don't want to be in love with you, and then it just drops off and we don't see it until like the end when she sacrificed herself, I think that could have worked a lot better too. Because, you know, we could have seen her actually give in to that and then allow herself to love him.
Yeah, I mean, if I was writing this, I would make one of them have an obsession with this goop. Just like, you know, they all get there. Second act of it is this debate on, you know, should we trust it or not? No, they just decide to research a lot and explain it all in different forms. And it's just too much. But we're going to wrap up here because I feel like we're just repeating ourselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, Prince of Darkness, recommend or not recommend? Let's start with Hector.
Oh, fuck. Save yourself the time and don't watch this movie. Unless you really want to see, like, if you're in the mood for a bad movie or a movie that's, like, not entirely fulfilling, maybe watch this movie.
Again, way too generous. Shelton.
I really am.
Shelton.
I think if you know a bit about the Lovecraft mythos and you're really into it, then don't expect it to be a good movie because it's fucking dog shit. But, you could watch it, and seeing the visual representations of that on the screen is definitely entertaining, especially since we don't get that often.
Oh, all right. As for me, if it's not obvious, it's a not recommend for me. I don't recommend this to anyone, honestly. I don't think this movie is a waste of time. I just think it's a waste. This movie to me is unevenly paced. It's hard to understand for someone like me, especially if you're just watching the movie. Even if you're a fan of John Carpenter or if you just want to know about filmmaking, this has none of that in there at all. There's nothing really defining about this movie for me. The parts I could understand, I did like, you know, I did kind of sort of understand the whole story of the alternate God and Jesus being an alien and the whole devil Nickelodeon slime. But other than that, it's like, there's nothing really here. Even in the Lovecraft area, like, it's theme, but I feel like you can find these themes somewhere else and have a better discussion.
It was a cool theme for sure. The execution was handled quite poorly.
Yeah, like this movie. Yeah, this, I don't know. I do know. This just sucks. like I said earlier, even for a horror movie, the deaths are kind of mediocre. Like, it's just people cracking necks, spitting on each other, and bugs.
I'm just going to throw this in real quick. I loved the whole, like, when the guy got stabbed in the little courtyard or the front lawn or whatever, and the insects taking him over, and then everybody looks out the window as he falls apart. That was pretty cool.
That was just a WTF. Like, okay, he got stabbed by scissors and then he turned into bugs. Like, I don't understand. But I don't know. Like, while I was watching this movie, I thought of six movies that overall are way better than this movie. And most of these I like, and one of them I don't like. For number one, Exorcist, 1973. Watch that instead. You'll have a better time. It's about the same pace. Maybe it's a little longer, but it's better. Flatliners. Not a lot of people like this movie, but I like it. Flatliners from 1990 and even the 2017 remake, much better than this movie. It's the same setup. That's why I like the first hour of this movie. It's very similar to this in Fantastic Four. But other than that, like, you get a lot more out of those movies than this one. I also thought about The Thing. We discussed that. Listen to that podcast. Go watch that movie. Like I said, I thought of Night of the Living Dead. And, it's a bonus movie, but Assault on Precinct 13. Watch those instead. I thought of Evil Dead when people are transforming into monsters and stuff. And, you know, it's a shorter movie. Go watch that. From Beyond from 1986. I don't even like this movie. I saw this movie once. It gave me a headache. Shelton, you would love this movie because it's essentially the same Lovecraftian premise of scientists doing something and Lovecraft monsters come through. But
better than this?
Yes, I don't know. It's wackier. It's bloodier. Way better than this thing. It's more entertaining.
I want a better setup plot. I don't give a shit if there's more gore.
Oh, and no. And that, no. But, like, you know, it's fun to look at. Still better than this movie. So, no. For me, not recommend for The Prince of Darkness. Don't ever watch this movie. So thanks, boys. We did another thing here. Hector, I'm sorry you had to suffer through this. Shelton, I'm glad you enjoyed suffering through this.
I love the pain.
This one was rough, I'm not gonna lie.
It was definitely rough.
I hope the next one is better. So yeah, that's our show. Thank you, Shelton and Hector, for joining me tonight. Thank you for listening. If you want more of the Murderboard podcast, you can find us on Instagram at Murderboard_pod and on Twitter at MurderboardThe. There you can ask questions and leave comments about the show. And please don't forget to share the podcast with family and friends. You can find us on most of your favorite podcast networks, such as Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and right here on Anchor Podcasts. Also check us out on Google Podcast. That's another one too. Also consider supporting the show and helping sustain future episodes such as this by hitting the support button and link down below in the show notes. Look for new episodes on Fridays and Sundays, and we will catch you again on the Murder Board. All right, guys. I wish there was a closing line, but this movie has nothing in it.
Just don't turn into bugs. Yeah.
Don't How eat about, the gobble goop. Yeah, you know. If,
don't eat the goop. Don't touch the goop. Don't be near the goop. Don't think about the goop. And don't study quantum physics.
There you go.
That's pretty solid.
Yep. Go do something else. All right, guys.